Well, hey everybody, it's Chuck. Welcome back. Well, we are in the AI4 Model Y, and yesterday morning we got a new software build, a point release, FSD supervised version 13.2.7. No change release notes. We're still just kind of doing point releases. From Kalina Brown on X, it looks like this may just be a build to help those on version 13.2.2 get to this build number. I don't know. It's a little bit confusing, but we're going to go out and do an protected left turn to start and do our first impressions drive and talk about some things here on the podcast and the video, and we'll just see where we go. So I've got my normal route in here. I am once again near a curb, a little bit different distance, have some pedestrians here coming up on the right. I'm just going to FSD start and hold from this position and see if it'll get me going. Here we are. There's the pedestrians going by the right side, and now that object and path detected, take over to proceed. And okay, so that time it did it. I don't know if it was the distance to the curb, maybe it was some changes in the code, the model, or something else. But in any case, that time it did start. It almost might have been waiting on the pedestrians that time, because the pedestrians were walking right by the car, and then right after they passed, it did proceed. It did have the take over to proceed message though, so there's still a little bit something there. Okay. So it is Sunday morning. It's Super Bowl Sunday for those that celebrate. I'm not a huge football fan, but I enjoy my local football. And here we are at our creeper. Didn't really do a NHTSA stop there, did it? A nice gap here, wide open from the right. So this is going to be a roller, and we're going to proceed right through it. So fine, low traffic, unprotected left-hand turns. I'm not going to give it any credit or any knocks for performing that turn in low traffic, because it's been able to do that for a long, long time. The things to note is there was no question mark, and it did not do a NHTSA stop that time. So let's do one more, and you know what? Yeah, let's do one more. There's actually a traffic stop going on here on the right. That could be interesting on our U-turn, but we'll try to develop that scenario here in just a second. Stick with me. Okay, here we go. Not sure if we're gonna get any traffic on this one, but we're just gonna do what we can do on a Sunday morning. Okay, so there's a good solid NHTSA stop there. So the NHTSA stop is still there, didn't take that away. A nice creep, and it's wide open to the left for the moment and wide open to the right. So you got two rollers there, a little bit of intermittent traffic, but nothing to write home about. Unprotected left turn in no traffic scenario is fine. So what I do wanna, interesting, full self-driving may be degraded. I did clean my windshield. There was a lot of pollen on it, and I got pollen smears, and then I did the windshield wiper. But what I want you to notice, look here on the opposite side of the street right now. There's a policeman that has stopped with a car, and the driver's in the car, a horrible place to do a pullover. Very, very unsafe location. They should have pulled to an off street, because they're using up a full lane of traffic. Now, let's see, unprotected U-turn here. Okay, I was very curious if it was going to go in front of that truck, because after that truck, it's wide open. So now here we go, doing our U-turn. And fine, the U-turn's fine. Is it going to go straight in the middle lane? Now look at this. Here's our, is it going to go over one more lane to give this a traffic stop even more room? Okay, it didn't. It just stayed in the center lane. I would have gone over one more. I'm going to go ahead and record that as a snapshot. That was a good situation. Obviously, that scenario needed as much room as possible. Low traffic, it's really low risk. But that has never happened before on this road. Normally, when people get pulled over for speeding, which does happen because they should pull over right here on Huntington, which is my unprotected left-hand turn, right? So that straightaway is why this unprotected left-hand turn is so risky, is because it's got this long straightaway where it's very easy for people to go much faster than the speed limit. And in that case, somebody got pulled over. So, all right. Well, I'm just from the outset going to say I don't expect much on this drive to be different than 13.2.6. But I like to do first impressions drives on the Model Y and sometimes the Cybertruck. You know, I'm driving the Cybertruck full time. There's not many of you watching these Cybertruck videos. So, you know, for me to spend, you know, 5 hours creating a video for a couple hundred people to watch, you just, you know, it's sometimes it's not worth my time. Not that I do this, you know, just for the views, but it is a lot of time. And depending on my week and what's going on, I may or may not make, you know, all these videos at once. You know, AJ and I, for example, spent all day yesterday morning making a Cybertruck wrap video just to kind of wrap up my Test Bros wrap kit, which, by the way, went really, really well. Not perfect, but I had a great time doing it. If you're interested in wrapping your truck or any car, I guess, with a DIY kit, you might want to check out that video. I posted it both on X and on YouTube in 4K because there was a lot of things I learned being the first time I ever did a wrap project. And I did it outside, which is against all the rules, but I don't have a garage. No problems with a forward-facing, unprotected left, complete roller on a flashing yellow, crossing the railroad tracks, no problem there. Easy peasy. I almost hate doing a drive on a Sunday morning because it's so easy, but at the same time, I don't want to put constraints around when I do drives. It's nice to randomly see what's going to happen, I think. So just to wrap up on the wrap kit, you know, G at Test Bros and his Test Bros team has done a great job, you know, helping with videos, being supportive on the support side, answering questions when I just didn't know what I was doing. There's a Facebook group where a lot of people post questions and comments that are also very helpful. And I definitely think you shouldn't be afraid of trying it. The price point is just so much more affordable if you think you've got it in you, that I just don't think that the fear of change or the fear of am I going to like it or am I going to want to change it doesn't matter as much because you don't have quite as much invested in it. You know, if you spend, you know, $4,000, $5,000, $6,000 sometimes to have a wrap done professionally, you know, you might feel a little bit more invested in not changing it or keeping it for a long time or trying to make sure it lasts and you know, ultra protecting it and never taking it to the car wash and all of those things. I'm very happy with my the way I feel about it just being a truck and it's got a nice wrap on it and I did it myself. And, you know, anyway, that kind of ends there. So this Birkenhead drive didn't really have any narrow road scenarios to develop with oncoming cars. They kind of fixed it on the last version. If you remember two versions ago, there was a regression that it steered toward a car. Not that that can't happen again, but that was a little bit of an oddball. All right, the next event is our unprotected center turn lane test. I'm trying to use better words. And the center turn lane is kind of a defined median with paint. Okay, there's our NHTSA stop. We can't quite see. Now we need to creep and wait. Okay, wow, that was an aggressive creep, but that's a good creep. That's fine. And this is good. We got a few cars to wait for, some what I would call medium gaps that could tempt the car to go. Ooh, like right there. That was what I would have called a medium gap. And it rolled it straight through the turn lane and in front of that car. And that car was far enough back that was fine. So that was a nice, smooth, aggressive unprotected left turn through a center turn lane. You know, some people have a different name for it. That was good. The confidence in that turn is exactly what I want. The Cybertruck does not have that confidence yet. It has got this second guessing itself feeling after it commits to a turn. So there's a clap for Tesla AI on that one. That one felt really, really good. Not saying that was a change on this build number. That could have happened on the last one, but just with the way the gaps presented themselves, and then the way the car handled it was very smooth and good. If I had been in the Cybertruck, I imagine once it got to that center turn lane, it would have started kind of second guessing itself and wondering what to do and whether or not it could fit. And honestly, the acceleration curve on the Cybertruck after it's making turns is still kind of a lethargic, lazy feeling. It's just kind of how it feels. It just doesn't have the oomph that the Model Y does in committing to its decisions. Now, that could be about vehicle weight. They could be applying the exact same torque on the Model Y and the Cybertruck. It just feels different on the Cybertruck because of the weight of the vehicle. But they need to adjust the acceleration curves and the torque so it feels more confident is I guess my point. Okay, here on Wilson Boulevard, and every single time it does this left-hand turn or left lane selection, I don't know why it does it. Maybe just the scenario continues to present itself in the way that that's what it wants. Maybe it's these cones it saw way in the distance. I don't know. But even on the mornings where I've got a school zone and we're approaching the school zone sign, of course, it's not in session. It's been selecting this left-hand side. I would love to say it's choosing this left-hand side because it knew about all these cones and construction from some data layer, but I don't believe that. I don't think that's what's going on. These cones are not here every single time, but this time you can see there's a lot of construction, so of course this is a great lane to be in. But I'm not thinking that is what happened there. It's a beautiful day today. I tell you what, here in Florida, for those of you that live down here, you probably know what I'm talking about. We're watching the rest of the United States up north in the Midwest, snow, sleet, ice, and cold. And it was 80 degrees yesterday here, Fahrenheit. And I was out in the bee yard. And for those of you that love my honeybee content, my bees are almost in swarming mode, which means they're so healthy and so strong that they're getting ready possibly to split themselves, which is the natural reproduction cycle of the superorganism that is a honeybee colony. You know, it's kind of like the individual bee reproduces through a queen laying an egg and it going through a pupa larva in adult stage like insects do, but the superorganism of the colony reproduces and spreads its genetics by getting so strong in the spring that it splits itself, and then the casted swarm is what it's called, takes the older queen with it, and then the bees that are left behind in the colony are left with the resources and eggs in order to make a new queen. The story of making a new queen is a whole nother fascinating factor of life and how it's done, but that's how it happens. So, long story short, it is swarm season here in Jacksonville, you know, coming up soon. My hives were ready to swarm almost. No swarm cells, for those of you that know what I'm talking about, but it's getting to be that. I got all of my swarm traps up, which is the way I catch swarms from either my neighbors or feral bees in the environment. I don't know. It's kind of like fishing for bees, and it's just another one of those fun things I love to do this time of year. It's a great time of year. Okay, well, we're finishing up here on Wilson Boulevard. And Wilson Boulevard is just a kind of a two-lane city street with stoplights, a couple lane changes for navigation required, very low traffic, a few cars around, and lane selection so far has been great. It's in the right lane, ready to join the highway. And as soon as we jump on the highway, we will be testing our standard mode again, and then a couple lane selections and just kind of feel the speeds. I do have something that I want to talk about. With a little bit of length here, and I kind of waited till we were joining the highway in order to start this discussion. A fellow follower on X posted a Cybertruck crash story this morning early, and it was his Cybertruck, and he was in FSD, and he was in FSD 13.2.4. This is what he said. I haven't seen any evidence other than this photo yet. He did say he was going to send me the video. But whether or not this is a true story or not, I have no reason not to believe it. But I just want to say that this can happen. The Cybertruck reportedly was on FSD, and it got itself into a lane selection scenario where it was in a merge lane and it ran out of space in order to merge because it had been boxed out by traffic next to it. And the decision it made went over a curb and somehow went into a light pole. Okay, there's a whole lot to unpack there. And I didn't see the video, so I don't want to articulate it as if I saw it. But let's just take the hypothetical and the scenario of a Cybertruck crashed while on FSD. And this owner said, it was my fault. I should have been paying more attention, but it happened in a fraction of a second. And it can happen. It can happen to any of us. And that's where I want to get into this, is this point that we have in aviation. It's about automation bias and automation complacency. They're two kind of intertwined terms that speak to a factor in the human being's behavior. And it's a, you know, and it kind of ties into another subject we've talked about in the past called procedural creep. And even in some recent accidents that happened in the United States, fatal accidents, they're starting to investigate whether or not, you know, this procedural creep, willingness, deviancy from procedures could have been a factor. If you listen to the, never mind, I don't want to speculate on the accidents because the NTSB is doing their work, but there's definitely some things that were said on the radio that that sounded so routine, it made you wonder if the pilot or the co-pilot was actually acknowledging what they were saying, or were they just saying it out of habit? And while we're here driving FSD, and I'm here with you, you know, and here we are in our left lane taking our exit on I-10, which was perfect, we're driving in what I'm calling the middle of the drive. And many times I've referred to an FSD drive as a bell curve. And for those of you listening on the podcast, I'm using my hands to kind of draw the arc of a bell curve where it's low on the left, it's high in the middle, and it's low on the right. And I'm calling an FSD drive to me, like when people say, well, how good is FSD? I like to say, well, in the middle of the drive, it's amazing. So that's the height of the bell curve. Its performance is so good once we get on the main road, once we get on the highway, and once we're kind of doing our 3-hour drive. You know, to say you have a 3-hour drive with no interventions and, you know, 2 hours and 45 minutes of it was on the highway or on a long road without any interactions, that's pretty easy to do on FSD 13. It's the beginning of the drive and the end of the drive that have these nuances that create variability that the model just sometimes doesn't do things as perhaps they should all the time. So there again, I get into the middle of the drive being so good that FSD feels like a robotaxi when we're in this state, like I am right now in the middle of this drive on this highway. It's doing perfectly. But the problem with this is the more miles you get on your own vehicle with FSD, you start to reach a level of complacency that you trust it more than you should. This is a natural human behavior, and this is what we're talking about automation complacency. Your mind just starts to assume that it's doing so good, and you understand how it's going to behave, that you start to let your guard down. You start to deviating from the procedures, and then you let yourself get distracted. And then if you let yourself get distracted with tasks that require human brain cycles to focus, and when I say focus, I mean comprehend, read, or formulate responses, something like that where you're thinking. Have you ever been in a conversation with someone and you're looking straight at them talking, but you're already thinking about what your response is going to be, and you actually even forget or can't hear what they're saying any longer? Some people have that conversational technique, and I will admit sometimes I am. My race kind of thinks ahead without even being a good listener sometimes, and that's a fault of mine. But if you're reading a newspaper article or reading a text message, or say I'm here reading a text message and I'm reading something that just pisses me off and I'm like, oh, and I want to get a response out right now, or I it's a timely response. And as soon as I get distracted and start formulating words in my brain and trying to type them with a finger onto a phone, I am no longer using my brain cycles to monitor the vehicle. And at speeds like I'm going right now of 66 miles an hour, things can go from wonderful to deadly in just a few seconds. That's all it takes. And I can't say it happens very often, but those scenarios will prevent themselves. And if you let your guard down in one of the situations that can and will happen while we're in this gray zone of supervised FSD and not yet unsupervised, that's when bad things can happen. You have to have pretty quick reaction times. And in aviation, we recognize that this is a human behavior. We're not saying don't do that. We're saying we recognize you're going to do that. So we're going to train you, and we get training on this every single year, with techniques to mitigate that human behavior. And the way we do that is with what's called active monitoring. Active monitoring is a technique that you have to train and practice on. It's not easy to do, just say, go do it. You know, this screen up here that says, pay attention to the road, Chuck, that's not enough to make me active monitor. That's enough to make me remember, oh yeah, I'm supposed to be looking at the road, or I'm looking at the screen too long, or something else like that. But it's not enough to teach me to actively monitor. Active monitoring includes something that your brain does repetitively so that it becomes a pattern, and even when you're not thinking about it, you're doing it. Like riding a bicycle, like many other things that we do in our lives without actively thinking about it. It requires training, it requires repetition, but once you can do it, you're doing it without even noticing it. I'm paying attention to things right now without even noticing it. I'm looking at the speed, I'm noticing the lane changes. Does the blinker come on? Does it not? The lane selection. These are things I'm paying attention to, but it involves a scan. And a very young pilot, like my son, Charlie Cook, he's in the Pensacola right now in Navy flight school. He is learning an instrument scan in the phase of flying he's in called basic instruments. And they even start with a T pattern. They want you to look at your altitude. They want you to look at your speed. They want you to take your speed. They want you to go over to the pipper. The pipper is the horizon, the artificial horizon. And they want you to continue this cycle. So here in the Model Y or the Cybertruck, I go from speed, screen, road, speed, screen, road, navigation. Sometimes I do this lane selection. It's a scan, okay? And then obviously the road includes the vehicles around you, their light behavior, their blinkers, and the space you have around you. Right now I see a truck I have in my back left-hand quarter, right? That's in my scan. So now I know I don't want a left lane change. A lot of things can be incorporated in your scan. But what I'm telling you is that this has to be trained. And what the situation we're in right now is we're throwing a lot of people in vehicles with a very, very good system that will only breed this complacency in the middle of the drive where FSD is performing at such a high level. You know, on my unprotected left-hand turn, there is zero chance of me or anyone else doing that turn to be complacent. There's just no way. You're scared shitless, most likely, and you're just not going to risk you, your vehicle, or your car doing that maneuver. That's what I'm talking about, is the level of complacency only exists in the areas where you have become accustomed to it performing at a high level over and over and over again. One other metric here we talk about with pilots, there is a curve, and it's a bell curve of accident. It's not a bell curve, actually. It's an S curve of safety. And a pilot is most safe right out of training, and then he gets really, really dangerous at about 1,000 to 1,200 hours of flight time. That 1,000 to 1,200 hours of flight time comes with this arrogance, complacency, and it's not complacency as much as it is kind of a know-it-all. You start to think you know everything. And then the accident rates for pilots at this point go up rather high. Matter of fact, I can say I've lost three of my peers over my military career at that point in their career of flight time, and they were very silly pilot-induced errors that should not have happened. If you get through that 1,500 hour point and into the 2,000 to 2,500 hour range, up into the 20, 30,000 hour range, like, you know, pilots like myself are, you get very, very safe. But it's because you've got much more experience, you know, and there's this saying, right? I'm older and wiser, but the reason that I'm older is because I'm wiser. That experience does not come through anything but time. And I would argue that a new FSD user that buys a new Tesla, As soon as you get it, you're just like my son in flight school. You're gonna be as safe as you can be. You got this brand shiny new car and you are, you know, not gonna hurt it one bit. You own that car for about 6 months to a year and you've had FSD the whole time and you are a road warrior and you're putting miles and miles and miles on FSD. I would argue that you're in that 1,000 to 1,500 hour point where you're gonna let your guard down and you're gonna be dangerous. But once you kind of drive 2, 3, 4 years on this and you've scared yourself enough times, you kind of get to be that older, wiser pilot that might actually survive an unexpected behavior because your guard is up. You've learned some hard lessons, perhaps with or without an accident, and you're just wiser for it. Okay, so that's my talk on aviation kind of parallels with complacency, automation bias, and procedural creep. I hope that resonated with some of you. It's a hard conversation to have, but I just want to share my own experience and you can take it or leave it. If that resonated with you and you say, well, that could be me or that could be someone in my family, then have a side conversation with them and tell them some stories, perhaps, and show them some things that could happen. It's hard to put these messages into kids' brains because they're in the know-it-all stage. So if you've got teenagers, just be careful and teach them the best you can. Okay, here we are at our Memorial Park stopping position, and this is where I have continued to do the reverse test into this chain. This chain, of course, is a very skinny chain. I'm just going to press the P here. Let me see. I press the P. Come on, P. Won't let me press it. There we go. I don't know, this stack still feels kind of crude. So it's preparing to back into it. It sees the pillars, it's got the lines marked, and there it is. And okay, so we're still backing into the chains. That's not what we want. I'm gonna go ahead and put it in park, and I am just gonna start FSD supervised from this awkward position, and it should just pull out to the right and go. As it did, no problem. So far, here we are halfway through the drive. We're at our Memorial Park chain backup situation, and it feels the same. The 13.26 was a solid build, no issues with that. This feels solid. The Model Y just drives so great as compared to the Cybertruck. It's so weird. Having the Cybertruck keeps me balanced because I know a little bit how Hardware 3 folks can feel and a little bit how the other Cybertruck drivers can feel. It isn't always perfect. And it's not because it's making bad decisions all the time. It's just that you can tell it's got a different brain. Somehow, even if they're, and how they're putting all these out on the same branch number, I don't know. There's probably a secret decoder ring for what these actual models and branch numbers are because they all have the same numbers, yet they're completely behaving differently. The functionalities aren't even the same, right? You know, so the Cybertruck doesn't have the same FSD 13 functionality that this car does. So they're not even differentiating in that fact, which is why Tesla Scope and everybody else is now having to relabel their hardware versions, you know, Hardware 3 version, you know, Hardware 4 version, Cybertruck version, and all these different kind of labels to make sense of where we are, because the number is becoming a little bit meaningless as far as what's included. I am glad we are on the same. Oh, nice, good scenario here. Turning left, pedestrians in the crosswalk. We got the green arrow, honoring them. Perfect, perfectly handled. I love the way pedestrians are treated. It didn't do anything unexpected there at all. Okay, as we come down towards the end here, our cul-de-sac is our three-point turn backup scenario. You can see we don't have a profile showing anymore on our screen, so it is able to back up when a standard profile, hurry profile or chill profile is not showing. Last time, if you remember, we got in here and it kind of did some weird loop-de-loops to try to find a spot to park. Let's see where it goes here. Okay, so this time it just pulled here and left it here. So I'm just going to press hold here. There's a truck over here that's going to make a U-turn. Let's see if it can do it. This truck is a little bit different dynamic. It's going to need to back up. But without a guy, it backs up so fast. Arguably, it backs up better than me. And there's no doubt it puts the steering wheel in a better location than me. We've got a couple pedestrians here that are, it looks like they're sweeping up some glass or something here on the road. See that right there? It looks like a beer bottle or something. And I hope it gives them, yeah, there's definitely like a beer bottle on the road and they're trying to kick it out of the road. But it slowly went around them with whatever they were doing. And obviously it did not see the glass. It just saw the pedestrians there. Okay, we got a green light here. You see this? This is where, see how slow it was going there? I don't know. That was where, as a human, I was distracted a little bit with those pedestrians back there in the glass, but there was a green light up ahead. And that was where, as a human, I would have accelerated to try to make an active green light. And it was meandering at 15 miles an hour when the speed limit was posted at 25. So I wonder if it was just kind of lingering on this narrow road regardless. It was showing green. So in my mind, it should have been going the full speed limit up until the point that the light turned yellow and it decided not to go, right? Why would it go 15 and a 25 with a green light ahead? Even if it, I mean, it wasn't a real visible green, it was through some trees, but I did see green on the screen there. Huh, I don't know. It was a fine decision. It's just, I'm curious why it did that. Okay, well, coming up to 5 points, which has been this odd little scenario I've given the car that is a little unfair, admittedly, but it's kind of the Kobayashi Maru for those of you that love the Star Trek references. And if you don't know what that is, it's in Wikipedia. You can go look it up. It's kind of like the unwinnable problem. There is no right solution, so it's just kind of watching how you handle the situation rather than expecting you to succeed. So you see here on the map, I've got it thinks it draws it as a traffic circle. If I really wanted to go straight, I should just go straight. But because the planner has it going right, it tries to do a U-turn here. I didn't do it today, though. That's so weird. And it's just going to pull over in these spots without... is it going to go all the way? Is it going to park? This was a much better solution than last time. Those of you that don't know what happened last time, I put it on X as a highlight and it was in the video. It's not... Okay, how do I show you this? It's not in... You see me swipe up for the front bumper camera like I was in the Cybertruck? If in these repeater cameras, you can see I'm not in the lane lines. In the right repeater, I'm right on the line. In the left, you see all that room. So I just kind of pulled over. I did not park. So I guess that's my takeaway here, is I did not actually park. I just kind of pulled over in these spots. This is where the FSD stack and the parking stack are truly different. The parking stack actually currently will not pull into angled parking spots like we're in right now. So I'm just going to take a little break here and show you something. When you come down to the software page and you go to release notes, the feature that I think is coming that will fix this is this up down here in upcoming improvements. If you see support for destination options, including pulling over, parking in a spot, driveway or garage, that third from the last bullet there, I think is what is going to allow this right here to work better. So it's an upcoming improvement, so it's no change there. But let's see, I've got my button here because I it thinks I reached the destination. So to get out of this spot, I've got to kind of do a backup into traffic here, and it's got the rear camera to see. Ooh, look, there's a pedestrian right there. It's creaking, the steering wheel's turning a little bit, it's backing out, nobody's coming. This is great. I say it's great because it worked out, right? It worked out with the where it pulled over, its ability to back out of a spot, and let me just see how it's navigating. Oh yeah, this is a novel new way to go that gives us a whole nother benefit. So the way the vehicle just handled it on this version, I don't want to say I know, but I do not believe it's because they fixed something in 13.2.7. I mean, there's a chance that the labeling team put something on that intersection back there and said, whoa, stay away from that, you know, do something else. And it chose a different behavior. But I truly believe just today's scenario had a different outcome due to the probabilistic nature of this entire solution, just kind of seeing what it sees that day, taking what the planner is giving it and making a decision. Lighting can change. The shadows on the trees could change. All of these things, I think, go into the outcomes. I don't think if I did that turn 10 times, it would do the same thing, the exact same thing 10 times. I'm fairly certain of it. This location is not something I'm going to come do repeat tests on and stuff like that, just because it isn't that important to me to validate things that I don't think are scenarios to, it's an unfair challenge, right? Meaning, like, I put the pin in kind of a really bad location, and they're treating that traffic circle, that weird intersection as a traffic circle, when in fact it's not. But our reroute after that parking choice did throw us back on this Memorial Park road that you're familiar with. If you've seen this part of the drive, you know, thousands of times, it feels like. I know it's not thousands, but definitely hundreds of times with me. And we're just going to shoot down here towards Biscotti's and kind of go through the S-curves and see how it does there. I do want to say, on the last version of the Cybertruck, the turns have got a little bit of a jerk in them still. A lot of people have said, has it stopped the weird lane selection? I have not had the car jump, even the Model Y, jump into the wrong lane in the last two versions. That is my mapped area. So that seems to have been fixed since that weird regression that I was able to get on film in the Model Y. You know, another side story about my mapped area. My son, I mentioned him earlier, and he's in flight school out in the Pensacola area, and he lives in a town called Milton, Florida. Milton, Florida is a small little town near Naval Air Station Whiting Field, which is where he's in training. And I just call it a small panhandle rural town in Florida. And he's driven his Hardware 3 Model Y both in Jacksonville and out there. And he is absolutely convinced that my area works because of the ADAS drivers and the data that's been collected either with me driving or someone driving in Jacksonville. He is having a heck of a time with his Hardware 3 Model Y, and he is on early access. That vehicle number is still in early access, so that VIN number is getting the latest releases on Hardware 3. So he did just get, 12.6.4. Very interesting slowdown there that does not happen very often without a pedestrian in it. That was interesting and notable. So he's just saying that, you know, and I keep saying it must be the map data. Like, you know, there's, you know, two lane roads and he needs to take a right hand lane and it never gets in the right hand lane and it just goes straight and then it remaps. And, you know, it's like the planner is just off. Or the planner's right, but the vehicle doesn't get in the lanes appropriately, or just things like this that he just says are not good. And I feel for him, because I do feel that map data, while essential for a planner, is still the Achilles heel of this system of putting itself in a bad situation. Because, you know, if you need to know that a lane is a merge lane and going to end in 500 feet, and you can't realize it till you see it, and the car can only see so far, then there's some advantages of a human being able to see 2,000 meters ahead and the vehicle only seeing, whatever you want to believe, 250 to 500 meters ahead. You know, if you look on these screens, they're definitely not mapping, you know, people 2,000 meters ahead or even 1,000 meters ahead. It just isn't happening. And maybe those are ranges beyond what I'm talking about. Maybe 1,000 meters is a better example. But I don't know. Tell me what you guys think about map data. Do you live in any small rural towns? Do you, you know, live in places where you just, you feel like it's just behaving drastically differently from, you know, what you see my car driving or anybody else's car that's, you know, driving well? And what are the differences? You know, this is a training set. Now, granted, I don't want to say your town doesn't do well because of this weird intersection with a label that says no right turn except for Sunday at 2 p.m. I'm not talking about those scenarios. I'm talking about just normal roads, like I'm driving on here, but your normal road just behaves differently than my normal road. And what would be the difference? I you know, to me, there is metadata underlying this map data we're looking at here. And the metadata underlying that is giving some clues as to blinkers and what lane it needs to be in and some things ahead of time. You know, because we are still relatively limited by context length. We don't have much context right now because we have not gotten that 3X update that is apparently coming in the next release. But I'm just editing my route here for you guys. You know, context links will definitely help remember things that it sees. You know, like if a person walks in front of a truck and then a lot of time goes by before it sees them again, that context link should help there. But, you know, local knowledge and experience is a whole nother layer we have in our brains that the car doesn't have. You know, every drive that FSD makes is the first drive it made in its life. All it knows is the driving skill that it has from its training set. You know, and we can say, oh, it just needs more data. And I think that is the right answer. But curating and gathering that data to where we reach an unsupervised state has a tail on it that I don't know how to predict how long it is. Obviously, we're going to go in a robotaxi attempt here in June in Austin. And I'm very confident they'll probably make that timeline relatively closely because they're going to be able to manage the data set. Right? They've got a small location. This is what I've referred to in the past as a, you know, constrained ODD, constrained operational design domain. Once you constrain the domain, either to a city, to some routes, or something like that, you can be sure that your training is going to be good enough because you're out there doing it, testing it before you deploy it. But to deploy a system globally, you're kind of putting a generic system out there and saying it should know enough information to handle everything. And while we're getting better and better and better, I don't know how to predict the end of this journey because there's continually small little nuances that, you know, appear unsolved. And, you know, you say, well, add more data. Okay, well, let's add that one. Where does that end is my point. I do think we're going to get there. And I'm not saying we're not going to get to unsupervised at all. I can't predict when globally or, you know, generally maybe is a better word than globally, because globally implies regulations in Europe and things like that. I want to say generally as a term to say, are the skills there? But, you know, here on this drive, I don't know, we just went through the S curves and we're coming up with some traffic circles. It's kind of flawless. You know, I guess you can complain about my backing up into a chain. Obviously that was a fail, but that hasn't ever passed yet. Traffic circle here, no problem. Nice smooth merge with an oncoming vehicle. No steering wheel jitterness, anything like that. It's just fine. Now, obviously, a low traffic morning again is a huge benefit to this vehicle. You know, I do believe that this car could almost be unsupervised now on roads with no traffic, if you want to take that as a constraint. If I took all the cars off the road, you know, I could get from point A to point B almost 100% of the time today. I don't like to use absolutes of 0% or 100%, but I would just say it can do it. The capability is there. And maybe you need to take VRUs out of it. So you take all the traffic out, you just say the road and the car, can it do it? Yes, I think it can. Anyway, I don't know. It's a fun conversation to think about. These aren't formulated thoughts in my head that I've got written down on notes or paper. This is just me with a stream of consciousness on a almost perfect drive, basically perfect drive, trying to relay how I feel about where we're going and the road ahead. There's no doubt when you're on a drive like this and you never touch the steering wheel or the pedal, you can see the future of unsupervised driving. It is here. And the car is looking everywhere it can at all at once. I hate it when people make the argument that it can see 360 degrees and can see everything, because that implies that there are no constraints and walls and trees. And let me give you that one on the tree, just because I want people to use arguments like this that just kind of compares the differences between a neural network at its evolution point today and a human brain. If I've got a big tree and a bunch of shrubbery to the left of me and I can't see through it, the human mind can see vehicles or motion or even people through an obscuration like a tree with small little gaps in it. You just know something's moving back there. And I'm not saying that they can't train the neural network to do that, but to a neural network and these cameras with its evolution of a mind, not the human evolution of a mind, it has not quite learned how to pick that amount of detail out of what would normally be noise, leaves on a tree, dense shrubbery with a small little gap in it, right? And that context link probably matters there too. Can they train the neural network to possibly be there? Possibly. Absolutely, I think they probably can. But they gotta focus on that, and they gotta, you know, learn how to detect motion through trees. Let's go to an even simpler scenario. I'm right here in this second to last, third to last traffic light on this drive, and I've got a Dodge, you know, vehicle in front of me, and I'm looking through the glass at these vehicles in front and the traffic, and I can see that, and that's going into my brain. If there was a ambulance in front of this vehicle and the only visibility of a siren or a flashing light going off was through that glass, I'm able to see that and process it as an emergency vehicle up ahead. I have never seen, and I don't know this is a fact, I have never seen the Tesla contextualize inference through glass of something going on in front of it, you know, looking at it as if it was an obscuration, but there's visibility through it. And the Tesla AI team, if you're watching, I would love for someone to DM me and say, yeah, we can do that, but it's still pretty hard, or we're working on it. That would be great to know. But there is a lot of information through glass that I'm taking in as a human that is relevant. It could be cross traffic. It could be pedestrians. It could be an emergency vehicle. It could even be a hand signal from another driver in another vehicle that's saying, no, no, you go through the stop. I'm not going to. I don't know. Do you guys, have any of you ever seen a case where you thought it was looking through glass at something that was relevant that it behaved differently because of? I personally haven't, but I continue to recognize how much information I get in scenarios like that. And I don't think it's fair to say, well, the car can see better than you. And I'm like, yeah, it can in some scenarios, but I also got a whole lot of processing power that's taking in information that I still don't think is being used today on this model. So we've got some runway to go. And I just don't want to blindly hit the I believe button constantly and say they've got it because of how complacent it is to get a drive as nice as this one and say it's solved. Maybe just call me a critic. And maybe I'm just trying to continue to find weak spots as it gets better and better and better. But in any case, that's what I do. And if you guys continue to like this content and tell me you appreciate my feedback, I'm going to do it. I love driving it. I love the system. I think it's going to get there. I just love picking it apart to really, really think about maybe what's left to be done on a shorter and shorter list of items. Okay, this is our last, and this is probably going to be an unprotected left. We'll see. Yep, say they got the green light. I don't think we're going to get an arrow. We're probably going to get a green, and then we'll have to clear ourselves forward. And there's a big gap here that's shrinking if this light goes green. There it went green. Is it going to go for it? Yep, it did. Oh, boy. It didn't quite go with as much oomph as I would have liked on that one. I don't know if you can see through the 360 camera, if it's still running, I hope, how fast that car was approaching. The trajectory worked. It had the safety clearance it needed. But as a human, that car was doing this weird acceleration through a green light, and I just kind of lazily did the turn, right? I don't know. It's kind of one of those things that sometimes I wonder, when's the escape maneuver going to happen? When am I going to see a different behavior in a maneuver because of something that changed after it made the decision, right? We've seen this sometimes on my unprotected left-hand turns, you know, it commits to go, but oh no, wait, it can't go the whole way. Now it's got to stop in the median. If it had started that turn slowly and then accelerated, oh, I would have given like three claps on that one, because that's kind of what I want to see, is a change in behavior because of a change in situation, even after the commit. But anyway, it made it, and maybe you're saying it didn't need to do any better. I'm just telling you that the human would have pressed the accelerator a little bit harder based on the acceleration of that vehicle coming. Anyways, you guys made it. Hey, if you're still here listening to me, give me a comment below and tell me how long you made it. I don't care if you watched it one or two or three speed. I'm just glad you made it to the end. I make these longer videos to make sure I capture as much as I can. You can watch it in sound bites or watch it or listen to it on the podcast. If you're still here, subscribe to my podcast on your favorite podcast platform. I'm trying to put this out in multiple media formats so you can consume it. That's the best way for you. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you next time.